Here from the School of Music at Western Michigan University, our professor of trumpet, Dr. Robert White. Hello.
Hi.
And we have Dr. Bruce Uchimura, who's the director of the University Symphony Orchestra in concert this weekend. Hello, Bruce.
Good morning.
Tell us about when and where this concert is.
Sunday, February 5th, 3 o'clock, Miller Auditorium. Free as always. Come out, despite the weather, and enjoy the music.
Miller Auditorium.
Miller Auditorium.
3 o'clock, and it's free and open to the public. This concert features some real favorites of orchestra and classical music lovers, including Scheherazade, which we'll get to later in the hour. The concert begins with an overture by Giuseppe Verdi, Nabucco, and I was copied on some of your correspondence to the orchestra. I understand they've already been able to play this in public at least one time.
Mm-hmm. Showcase concert on Friday night.
How did it go? Night.
Excellent. We ended the program appropriately, and they sounded great.
Why did you pick this particular Verdi overture?
Because I like it.
That's too short of an answer. I need my guests to expound on things.
Yeah, one of his better overtures, right? All the opera composers wrote countless overtures, some better than others, including Mozart. And so I wanted to do a Verdi overture. We've done La Forza del Destino, so we decided, let's do Nabucco. I also had it spiked my interest because I had a conducting student that brought the score to me and said, I don't know how to conduct this thing. And I looked at it and I thought, what is it that you don't know how to conduct? Because it's very logical music, although it's written kind of funny. And so that propelled me to say, oh, well, I think we'll do this with the orchestra.
Is your graduate conductor going to conduct on Sunday?
No.
This was just a student teaching moment.
It wasn't a graduate conductor. It was just a student conducting that wanted to do this piece. A high school orchestra director, actually, that wanted to do this piece with the orchestra, his orchestra, but had a lot of problems with it.
What's harder, the loud parts or the soft and slow parts?
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up because, my wife told me, that was kind of risky to put Nabucco Overture as the closer for the WMU Showcase concert. And I said, what do you mean? And she said exactly that. She said, well, it's rather chamber music oriented, right? The orchestra writing is rather homophonic when it's loud. And the chamber music stuff, the solos are very exposed, right? The oboe and trumpet, oboe and clarinet solos, and the brass chorale at the beginning. So I never really thought about that, but fortunately they were on and they did a really beautiful job,
Yeah, yeah.
But that is one of the characteristics of this overture, naturally. It's such a sad story about the Jews being expelled by the Babylonians and so forth and so on. And, he wrote some very inspired music. I was telling Bob before we came on, it was a terrible time in Verdi's life, right? He had just lost his wife, 26 years old, and two infant children to death, probably disease. I don't exactly know what the cause was. So it wasn't a good time when he composed it.
I seem to remember he had thought fate was telling him to stop composing entirely, mm-hmm. and he had to be coaxed and practically coerced to take on this project.
That's true. Yeah. They practically locked him in a room,
Because but he was young. I mean, it wasn't the Verdi we know now where it was obvious
this was a
genius. This was somebody whose friends had to push him to resume his path.
Mm-hmm. And propelled this opera actually, propelled his fame and his, I'm glad because they pushed him to write more and so forth and so on. So I don't know. I guess it was a gamble because it's so exposed, the piece, it can go not so well. But they were on that night, so.
Bob, as an orchestra player of experience, can you add anything to? Do you have any stories of playing in this particular overture or knowing what the part requires?
This particular overture, I've been familiar with it for a long time, but I was trying to think of when I might have actually performed it. And I think if I ever did, it was only in the context of like a Pops concert or something. So I don't remember any distinct performances of it, but like all opera overtures, there's a lot of challenging stuff for trumpet players, especially. The art of transposition is something trumpet players have to learn. They play in different keys all the time. It's a long story why that is, but needless to say, in opera overtures, our key is changing all the time, not the key signature in the music, but it'll just say trumpet in D, trumpet in E flat, mm-hmm. trumpet in F, trumpet in E, trumpet
oh,
in C.
Really?
And you have to sort of look at the printed notes and make the switch in your mind.
Oh.
You're transposing at a different interval. So, you know, that's part of the challenge of learning these things is you can't just read the notes on the page. You actually have to play it in a different key than what's printed. But there is that lovely lyrical Bob Pensiero solo for the trumpet. Michael Goss, one of our graduate students, is playing that and sounds fantastic on it. And the low brass, they play the chorale at the beginning. They sound like experts. So I think it's going to be great. Great way to open the program.
Why don't we stop for a moment and hear music from the Overture to Nabucco. The mm-hmm. concert again is Sunday at 3 o'clock, free and open to the public in Miller Auditorium. We hear the overture to Nabucco by Giuseppe Verdi, a really exciting overture filled with fast, quick parts as well as really touching slow melodies. It's on the program for Sunday. If you just tuned in, my guests are conductor Bruce Ujimura and the soloist for Sunday's concert at Miller Auditorium, Bob White, professor of trumpet at Western Michigan University. If we're going in concert order, we have now reached the concerto selection, and perhaps you could introduce the piece by
sure.
a composer not many of us are familiar with.
Yeah, Alexander Arutunian, perhaps arguably Armenia's greatest composer, or at least the most well-known. This is an interesting little piece. It's a little bit of Soviet-era socialist realism. In other words, this is music that was meant to be completely accessible to the common listener, regardless of their musical training or that kind of thing. And that's not to diminish it. It's a very flashy piece. It's going to be very reminiscent of 1940s, 50s Hollywood film scores, I think. Mm-hmm. Very colorfully orchestrated. Which actually links it in some ways to the Scheherazade, which we'll talk about in a little bit, the major work on the program, Rimsky-Korsakov Scheherazade. You know, Rimsky was known as not just a great composer, but a great orchestrator, a teacher of orchestration too, how to use the instruments of the orchestra in a way that enriches the texture, makes it transparent and clear, but also colorful and engaging to the listener. And Arutunian, writing, 75 years or so after Rimsky-Korsakov, had clearly inherited a lot of those skills in his training. And you'll hear that in the score. You know?
There's still a famous orchestra publication, a book by Rimsky-Korsakov,
right?
I think, that may have been on his shelf.
Yeah, he sort of expanded on what Berlioz had written sometime before, the treatise on orchestration. Rimsky had a lot to add to what Berlioz put down, just new developments in instruments and new discoveries and new levels of virtuosity in all of the areas, especially among brass and woodwind players. That gave Rimsky the opportunity to expand on what Berlioz wrote. And of course, you know, if you look at someone like Stravinsky, who was one of Rimsky's students in that regard, of orchestration, you hear those, you hear some direct connections in the way they orchestrate it. But the Aratunian, it's interesting because being an Armenian composer, this piece is full of that kind of ethnic flavor too. There's a lot of modal things, a lot of scales used that recall Middle Eastern music, that sound like music of, you know, those regions of the world that sort of straddle Europe and Asia. And there's some of that language melodically going on. So it's a very interesting piece and a very attractive piece.
Are you familiar with other pieces by Aratunian that did he write consistently in this sort of easily accessible folk influence style?
That is definitely the case. He mainly found his footing as a composer of music for brass instruments. That's, you know, sort of a niche, I guess, because, you know, we don't have the kind of repertoire that, you know, cellists have, violinists have. When we play concertos with the orchestra, most of what we have was written in the 20th century or later, unless we go way back to Baroque music. But this one, it's brief enough that it's not an impossible endurance task for the trumpet player to get through. There's lots of little breaks where the orchestra plays for a while. And, you know, the kind of colorful melodic language that Aratunian uses shows up in other things he wrote, other trumpet solo works, brass quintet pieces, things like that. Mm. Like a lot of Soviet-era music, once the, you know, once perestroika and, you know, the sort of collapse of the Soviet Union, a lot of stuff that was written before sort of didn't make its way out. So Aratunian sort of rebuilt his career after that, and late in his life had a kind of a burst of activity, being able to publish a lot of music in the States and so forth. But I think he was making up for lost time in a way, because a lot of film scores and things that he composed during the Soviet era sort of, you know, got lost or, you know, have yet to be rediscovered, I suppose. But
of course,
who knows, you know, yeah. Maybe some of it'll resurface.
Mm-hmm. Among trumpet concertos, mm-hmm. where does this stand?
Well, that's there's a lot of cynical answers I could give you just because our repertoire is so small. But, you know, I would say the greatest composers, if we're going to, you know, look at it that way, who wrote trumpet concertos are a lot of the Baroque figures like Telemann and people like that. And then, you know, we have Franz Joseph Haydn wrote a trumpet concerto. That's sort of a standout for us because there's not many other composers of his stature and reputation that bothered to write a trumpet concerto. But in the modern era, the Aratunian, it's been recorded by every major trumpet soloist, which there are a considerable number of. And it is one of those ones that if a soloist puts it on their list of repertoire, it's as likely to be programmed as anything else because of its accessibility and because of its attractiveness. You know, so it gets played a lot. Its challenges are formidable, but not impossible. And that also makes it appealing to soloists, I think, too, because you can actually sound good on it.
Was it something you studied as a student?
Absolutely.
At Western?
Yep, I did. And in fact, I also played it on my audition for this position when I came to interview for the job. You give a recital as part of that. And I played this piece on that recital, so.
Perfect. From the conductor's perspective and the orchestra player's viewpoint, what do you think of this concerto?
Yeah, well, I did, as I remember, I did the Aratunian tuba concerto with Deanna Swoboda one
That's
time.
Right.
And I like both works because they're very tuneful and very, actually quite memorable in many ways. And the it is well orchestrated, actually. And so, you know, there are the typical Russian sort of chamber music parts, solo, particularly with woodwinds, and then full orchestra blazing along. So I like the piece immensely. We're going to do our first rehearsal in a matter of hours with the orchestra.
That's right.
And you can hear it Sunday at 3 o'clock in Miller Auditorium. The concert is free and open to the public. We've heard the Verdi. Let's hear a little bit of the Aratunian.
And as we do that, I'll just say for the listener's sake, I mentioned the sort of the Armenian flavor of the melodic language. The opening of this piece really has that in evidence. It'll recall kind of the, actually, it reminds me a lot of the sort of call to prayer that you hear in Middle Eastern countries when the muezzin in the top of the tower and he's the call to prayer. There's a lot of the same sort of melodic twists and turns that you'll hear in that kind of chanting. So it's something the listener can be on the lookout for in this opening.
We heard the opening of the Trumpet Concerto by Arutunian, an Armenian composer. This piece composed right in the middle of the 20th century. What year was that, Bob?
1950, I believe.
And, of course, this was the era of the Soviet Union, so the composer was writing under the regime, and and as we know from history books and the stories of composers like Prokofiev and Shostakovich, that policy from the top, from top political circles was dictating how music should sound at this point.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, there's very famous stories about the struggles Shostakovich especially had with Stalin's regime. And, you know, I think the prevailing sentiment there, what those leaders were resistant to were the sort of things we identify with modernism from that part of the 20th century. You know, basically, they were resistant to things that were abstract, to things that were ambiguous, to things that were not giving a clear reading of what does this mean? What does this music mean? And to Artunian's great benefit, again, this isn't to demean him as a composer. I think he's a fine craftsperson. You know, his works are skillfully put together. He never really adopted a modernist language. He never even tinkered with it. He wrote everything in sort of a straight-ahead, accessible, populist style. Mm-hmm. So he didn't really have those kinds of struggles, you know?
It was also a resistance to what were seen as Western originating trends in music, which modernism certainly was.
Right, right. Yeah, and also, nationalism is a huge part of Soviet-era socialist realism, too. And so for Artunian, that becomes a benefit because it enables him to use the folk melodies that he was familiar with and sort of, you know, it gave him something of an Armenian voice, if you will. And I suppose that was probably something that he was happy to have. So he was sort of in the sweet spot of doing what he wanted to do and also giving the regime exactly what they were looking for.
And if he was a fan of Dvorak or Brahms or other so-called nationalist composers that just used the ethnic music of their region, that's a perfectly legitimate way to express yourself in
classical absolutely. Music, yeah. Well, and you know, in the Soviet Union, too, it was possible to sort of have a guaranteed living as a composer. You know, there were perks to going with the flow in that you would be given appointments, you would be given commissions, you would be given projects to do for specific purposes, like film scores, I mentioned, and things like that. There was a lot of incentive for an individual to, not upset the apple cart. For someone like Shostakovich, whose artistic impulses were more searching, more troubled, more introverted, I suppose, in a way, and it became a struggle. But for Alexander Artunian, he was able to make it work. I don't know what kind of struggles he may have had to deal with. They may have been considerable, but we don't have the literature on that the way we do for Shostakovich and Prokofiev. But
Shostakovich almost wrote a trumpet concerto. There's that first piano concerto.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, there are some similarities, I think. Some of the same sort of symbolic motives that we associate with the trumpet, fanfares and things like that. You do hear some of that crop up, for sure. Yeah.
Well, I'm speaking with Professor Bob White, who teaches trumpet at Western Michigan University, and the conductor of the university's symphony orchestra, Bruce Uchimura, about the concert coming up Sunday at 3 o'clock featuring the Arutunian trumpet concerto. The concert closes with Scheherazade by Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov.
Big one.
truly one of the, if you want to call it a war horse, this is...
It is a war horse, yes.
It is, and... I think it's beloved by musicians as much as by audiences.
Oh, I think so. It's probably one of the most famous pieces Rimsky-Korsakov wrote, based, loosely on the 1001 Nights tales of the Arabian Nights and so forth. Fascinating story, right? Scheherazade, there's the big sultan who begins the entire piece, the sultan's motive. And he was very disillusioned with women, and so... He decided to go on a rampage, and on the nuptial night, he would kill his wife. And Scheherazade came and decided, well, I think I'm going to save myself, and decided to tell him for 1001 nights stories, enchanting stories, which really did change his mind. And then Rimsky-Korsakov put this musical tribute together to it. In no particular, there are titles to the movements, but the music is supposed to be very free and up to the imagination of the listener. I think he wanted that, purposely.
Does it relate at all to a symphony or symphonic form, or is it really just a tone poem?
Yeah, very loosely. So there are certain aspects, four movements, for example, with the traditional, it begins with a moderate tempo, then goes kind of an improvisation, very interesting movement. A slow movement, of course, with the prince and the princess, and then finally the big finale, which has all kinds of things in it. So yes, loosely, but form-wise, no. Thematic, harmonically is very strange. It goes chromatic, like a lot of composers did, with all kinds of exotic modes used in addition to centering in tonality. And heavy use of improvisation, right, with the woodwinds and so forth and so on. Solos and violin solo, of course, which is the Scheherazade theme.
I was going to ask about solos next. The first one that comes to mind is violin, but I know there must be parts, really incredible solo parts.
Huge. It's a real virtuoso piece for the orchestra. So I was stunned again with my orchestra because the first rehearsal, which I have done this piece before, and was not a disaster, I would say, but the first rehearsal is always a little humbling, with a piece like this. Well, they were ready to go. So the soloists, of course, we do have auditions, and I'm sure the auditions for all the prominent solos were. Well, I found out all kinds of inside information. The bassoonist was working on it in the summer. The concertmaster, Jordan Curry, who won the audition fair and square, there were like five or six that learned the solos, did a research paper on it and had learned the solos over the summer. So that's the kind of commitment that everybody had to this piece. The harpist has played it many times, a couple of times, before. And all the soloists had been working on it very, very methodically. And so I was stunned, actually. Now, it's not that easy to put together because of the free nature of it. So that's kind of up to me. So we've been doing that. But they'll be rocking and rolling on Sunday.
Now I know why you put so much thought and effort into planning out your season ahead of time, well ahead of time. Because it sort of trickles, the responsibility goes from you right to the players in the orchestra, and they take it really, really seriously.
That's right. And that's why I'm the kind of conductor that I like to hear what they would like to play, because I know they'll be working on that, you know, or have worked on it and so forth and so on. So it's not an arbitrary process. I'm very careful about it, and you got to keep the orchestra happy, you know.
So. I would think you'd be worried, well, you'd be have to take care of yourself. This is a 45-minute work, and as a conductor, that kind of effort is hard to come by. This is a real marathon.
That's nothing compared to some of the orchestra works where I've actually been standing, like Verdi Requiem and so forth, Beethoven 9, that I've been standing. I said, how come I'm the only one, the only fool standing? Everybody else is sitting, you know, for an hour and a half. So no, it's a big work, but it's certainly, or Mahler, right? The Mahler one is an hour long and so forth. So it's longer than this piece.
Well, it sounds like it's in great shape already, and the concert is coming up Sunday at 3 o'clock. We'll finish this hour with music from Scheherazade, first movement. Any last thoughts, Bruce?
No, come to the concert and hear this marvelous orchestra and our School of Music students, and all the work of the wonderful professors like Bob White and so forth. And so it'll be good.
Anything to add?
Well, again, the students, they are really playing virtuosically on this concert, and it's a real showcase for them. Every piece, you know, shows off how well they play and how enthusiastically they play, and it's going to be very inspiring to see and hear.
Let's hear music from Scheherazade. Again, the concert is free. It's 3 o'clock on Sunday in Miller Auditorium.